Hello and welcome to Calvin Answers Live. On this Friday edition, we try to do interesting things. Well, we try to do interesting stuff every day, but stuff that might get you through the traffic on a Friday. And it's time for the panel show. We are back with our usual panel and have been getting we're going to try to not break our record here because we've been getting a lot of positive feedback on the panel show. I think there's a lot going on in the world that people would like to hear smart people like our guests talk about from a Catholic perspective. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, and sitting here in the studio with me is the president of Catholic Answers, the brawny man, Chris Check. You do look like the brawny man today.
I'm channeling Joe Heschmeyer today. I thought, because we had Joe on the show, I would wear, you know, my flannel plaid shirt.
I was really hoping you weren't going to explain that, and everyone was just going to wonder who was just listening to this. Why
does he love paper towels?
By looking like the brawny man.
Yeah, so
just looking really swole.
Right. I got this when I was, you know, when I did that summer at that lumberjack camp in the North Woods.
Did you have a song? Was there a theme song for your lumberjack camp?
Oh, I'm not going to take that bait.
Also joining us is the man all around the world known as the apologist in flannel. It's Joe Heschmeyer. Hi, Joe Heschmeyer.
I'm glad to know I've got a new moniker.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Well, you're very welcome. Also known as the proprietor of Shameless Popery and the author of a whole bunch of books, including A Man Named Joseph, Guardian for Our Times, and most recently, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church.
Which, by the way, is a great book.
Yeah. You did a nice job on that.
Yeah. Thanks, Joe.
No, it's very good.
Yeah. It's a.
I mean, you're not the most neutral parties on this, but
it's
you do publish the book. So.
we don't hit it out of the park with every book that we publish.
Have you ever heard me talk about Trent Horn's book?
That's true.
I think I might be worse than neutral. I'm going to give out the number in a little while, and we'll take callers. But the way the panel show works is, I just propose a news story, something that we can discuss at from the news of the day, and then we'll try to get a Catholic perspective. That usually the way Chris likes to present this is, Joe is the reasonable one among the three of us. Chris is the I don't know if there's a modifier for it, but just the conservative among us, and that
I like reactionary.
Reactionary conservative. And then for some reason I am identified as by Chris Check as the wild-eyed liberal.
Hippie liberal, I think is what I said.
Hippie liberal. Even
but
better.
You know, we have actually traded sides on a couple of things on this one.
Well, you made up the hippie liberal thing.
No, but where I clearly have been the complete, you know.
Oh, you're yes.
Compassionate.
Right. Well, it's funny how the Catholic ethos does not fit neatly into a political category.
It's why these right and left categories are not useful.
They're not very helpful.
When people ask me my politics.
That's going to be a really helpful conversational point when we talk about Russia and Ukraine.
Yeah.
Just throwing it out there.
Well,
it is transcending left-right boundaries.
All right, so
in both directions.
I've never seen so many left-wing Americans as pro-war as they are right now. Yeah.
I thought we weren't going to talk about whatever you do. Don't mention the war.
Well, all right, we're going to have to talk about the war, and there are other things. And I hope people are I'm sure in some ways tired of talking about the war. But there are things that war is one of those things that the Catholic Church actually has a whole vocabulary, a whole intellectual tradition for talking about that is actually very practically helpful to the world.
Yeah. And it begins with the premise that war's bad.
Yes, right.
And let's try to avoid it.
Yeah, right.
So let's make sure that if we're going to have one, we have met all the criteria.
So much so that I believe that, and correct me if I'm stating this wrongly, or as a hippie, getting it wrong, Joe. But in many cases, the church would prefer an unjust peace and allow that time to work itself out to war. You don't. As a matter of fact, I guess another way to say it is, you're really not supposed to address injustice by going to war, most of the time.
Right. There are social injustices under the best of circumstances in every society.
Yeah.
And we don't normally resolve those through the shedding of blood. And so it really. I mean, if you frame it that way, if you say the question isn't just, are there injustices being done? We can already answer that question in the affirmative in any social context you want to talk about. The question is, are they extreme enough to warrant this level of kind of reaction or resistance? You know, like at what point is it better to suffer an injustice? At what point is it better to risk the life of yourself, of your countrymen, of your family, of the enemy, or you know, the opposing side. And that is something that should be taken very seriously and done with a lot more gravity than we typically and historically have done.
So the church typically has used the language that it's the last resort.
Yeah.
Or words to that effect, right? The last resort.
But
she does because she knows that once things get underway, many evil things are going to happen.
Right. War is all the devils unleashed, and from the smallest things to the cruelties that otherwise maybe the police would have dealt with that just go unreported to great huge things like the destruction of whole cities and that kind of thing. The evils that accompany war make the church's strong stance that it is the last resort very, very compelling.
Well, by the way, and the imperiling of the souls of those who prosecute the war.
Exactly.
The
right.
soldiers who, in conditions of extremity, go morally off the rails.
Yeah, right, right.
And now that's a soul that's in danger of eternal damnation.
Yeah, leading each other into sin. So all of that said, it does seem to me that since the first Gulf War, it's sad that we have to number our Gulf Wars now, and I hope we've reached the maximum of those numbers. But since the first Gulf War, our country, the United States, has resorted to war quite a bit in resolving conflicts. One wonders, looking back on it, if we always did treat it as the last resort.
I don't think one wonders that. I think the evidence speaks for itself.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think
you're at the last resort every year somewhere in the world. Like, right. it just doesn't follow.
To the point,
the largest superpower in the world can't resolve things without the shedding of blood.
Right. And I think of the country of Libya, for example, where we were very casual about, and it's not the only one, but you develop this kind of casualness because you get in the habit of war and you go, well, horrible bad things are happening in Libya. Let's bomb the people who are doing these horrible bad things. And then I'm sure that Libya will pay the price for that for at least a generation, maybe two generations.
Pope St. John Paul, in the context of the First Gulf War, stated quite publicly, war is a human failure.
Yeah.
It's a human failure. And yet there are American Catholics who would describe themselves as conservative or right wing or anything, who are at pains to justify American military intervention, violent intervention on a frequent basis.
Yeah. Yeah. But that goes for, I mean, there's a lot of American Catholics who would like to go to war now with Russia. And
okay, can I say I am not one of them?
I'm glad to hear that, because there's probably not a worse idea in the universe.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's one worse idea. there's one worse idea than that. But other than that, it's number two of bad ideas.
Wait, what's number one?
China.
Denying Christ? Oh, okay.
No, but okay, so I think that we would agreed, the three of us, and I assume that most normal people in the world would be agreed that it seems impossible to say that the just war tradition would condone what Vladimir Putin did in ordering an invasion. There were other means still at Russia's disposal to get what she needed.
Yes, agreed.
Well, and yes, they're like, I've seen plenty of Catholics that try to do this, including a very strange missive from Archbishop Vigano, in which he refers to refers to Russia as Third Rome,
right,
which is the Russian Orthodox argument that it replaces the Roman Catholic Church, which is just kind of wild, kind of shocking. I thought.
Well, the head of Rome used to be a Caesar. You know, they used to call him Caesar.
Can we talk a little bit about that, the history of the Roman Empire and its malcontents?
But go ahead. Talk about the matter
well,
at hand,
I was gonna
the
say,
justice
it matters
of what...
from like a Catholic Orthodox perspective as well. Like, there's an actual Catholic issue at play behind some of that, going back even to the Tsar thing, because Tsar is just a Russian form of Caesar. And
right.
So it's this idea that Rome lost its authority and it was transferred to Constantinople, which is kind of cross ecumenical or excuse me, crossed Eastern Orthodox claim. And then after Turkey is taken over and Constantinople falls and becomes Istanbul,
1453,
then the Russians tried to claim that authority for themselves, beginning with Ivan the Terrible. But actually, the last Byzantine emperor bequeathed the title to, of all people, the Spanish king, who's never taken it. But if anyone wants to be called the Caesar, the Spanish actually have a better claim.
Well, really? In its day, the largest empire in the world.
Yeah, but I always thought the Austrians had the imperial claim, but that's not
well
that's,
through the Western line through Charlemagne and Holy Roman Empire.
Joe is good to bring up Archbishop Vigano's letter because it is a confused argument, and I'm fearful that good people may be misled by it.
But so what I wanted to get established was that from a just war perspective, one would have to have information that we do not have to say that it was just for the Russians to do what they have commenced doing in Ukraine.
Well, I mean, I think we can say just even before we get into the moral questions that just war theory or doctrine requires us to answer, Ukraine is today an internationally recognized sovereign country.
Yeah.
So at a minimum, you can say that invasion is illegal. It's a crime. It's a crime. But is the threat of Ukraine potentially joining NATO sufficient cause for Putin to invade? That's a very difficult. I would be unable to make that case.
Yeah,
I think it would be a difficult case to me. I mean, think about the Iraq War claim. It was the idea, Iraq might be developing weapons of mass destruction.
Oh, well,
so it was a preemptive
and
war.
Now, well, frankly, now we know that was simply that was theater. That was theater.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Colin Powell famously complains about being forced to say things he knows aren't true, I believe, at the United Nations. We justified that, or attempted to justify that, on a preemptive war doctrine that was already tenuous at best. The Russian claim isn't that Ukraine is about to attack them. It's that there are Nazis within Ukraine and that Ukraine attempting to join NATO may be a security threat down the road. Not that there's any kind of imminent threat at all, just that if they don't conquer Ukraine, a neighboring country might be very strong. But that, I want to stress this, like a neighboring country potentially being able to attack you does not justify you attacking them.
Correct.
Otherwise, all of Russia's neighbors could attack them. You know, China could say, hey, we've got a neighbor to the north that has shown itself pretty belligerent to its neighbors. We'll invade. So if you took that kind of doctrine, it would be endless bloodshed.
Historically, Ukraine, or before this conflict, as it was referred to as the Ukraine, was the reason that it was well nigh impossible to bring a land conflict to Moscow. Because you had to get across Ukraine in order to do it.
I mean, literally, the name means borderland.
Right. So it's
like almost by definition the buffer zone.
It makes...
So I get the anxiety.
It makes sense on the part of the Russians not to want that region to be partisan.
Without prejudicing the discussion by judging the Russian claims, whatever the claims were, it was wrong to go to war.
It was, and it was illegal. It was internationally illegal.
Which I feel more convinced personally by the immoral thing than the illegal thing.
Okay, very well,
but,
very well.
But we got to take a break. I went too long, but I want to come back to... The Russians are not the only people culpable in this. They are the primary actors. But good Lord, this is a mess of enormous proportions all up and down. We'll talk about that when we come back right after this.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host of Register Radio with Matthew Bunsen. Join us every week as we talk with the Register's expert writers and editors about the news you need to know and offer authentic Catholic insights on the important stories that impact your life. Register Radio, every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern and Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern here on EWTN Global Catholic Radio.
Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. It's our occasional Friday panel show. Maybe we try to do it once a month, every 5 or 6 weeks, if we can get Joe and Chris to be available to us. Last week, we couldn't get Joe to do it because it was his birthday. Happy birthday, Joe. Thank you. You finally turned 21. What we try to do is just talk about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. I propose the stories and we talk about them. We're talking about the war I say the war. It's not the only one on earth, but it's the only one that anybody's talking about, or everybody knows what you mean when you say the war. So we have established some things that the Catholic just war tradition has a great deal to say about this. I want to ask you two about a different just war provision, and then I will talk about the conference like Carrie wants me to. So I don't want you to worry, Joe. I'm going to talk about that. But I would like to say something that I think is quite unpopular at the moment. And I would like to say also that I don't care for this reason. I believe that wars always involve the surrendering of reason, where people get caught up in emotion and don't want to reason. So I just want to reason about this. Now, I could be wrong about it, but I'm not going to be intimidated by a strong emotion from trying to reason about this. One of the criteria of just war is reasonable hope of success.
Amen.
And I am not convinced that this is a just war on the part of the Ukrainians either, because of the lack of reasonable hope of success, that possibly hundreds of thousands of people will be killed in a war that is hopeless, and that the only possible way that it could be won would be if NATO got involved, and NATO has said it's not going to get involved. The U.S. got involved, and the U.S. has said it's not going to get involved. So I believe that the Ukrainian leadership also must be at least interrogated. They might come to a different prudential judgment than I will, but at least we need to morally interrogate them and say, why are you waging a war in which cities are being destroyed when you have the option of accepting a very uncomfortable, unjust peace, but nonetheless returning to a state of at least civil rest, if not peace?
Can I take a whack at morally unpacking this a bit? But I'm very glad you bring up this question of reasonable expectation of success. It's in the just war doctrine. And success means what? You have to say what it means. At the end of all of this bloodshed, we want what? Russia to have withdrawn its army out of the sovereign state of Ukraine, or whatever it is. I want to speak to American Catholics who make up the big chunk of our listeners and say that United States involvement in this war should someone want to make this argument, needs to say what success looks like. Yeah. And if we thought that by getting involved in this land war in Ukraine with U.S. or NATO forces, that we could drive Russia to the other side of the border there, but that is not, in fact, what will happen. That's not a reasonable guess.
What will happen? No, what will happen?
Rather,
is the country
it will escalate.
Will be destroyed.
It'll escalate, and the country will be destroyed.
Right.
So that's the. I'm glad you brought up the question of reasonable expectation of success. because it's the thing that American Catholics who are wrestling with this moral problem need to admit in trying to
It's one of the things we have to consider.
Thoughts.
Come
yes.
on.
Yeah.
You have to consider. And Jesus himself said that in that, Joe, you'll have to help me with the full citation.
Yeah, if there's a man with an army of 10,000 facing an army of 20,000.
Precisely.
Go out and make peace with him.
Yeah, go make peace.
Well, yeah.
And by the way, this is...
Well, let Joe finish.
One
I'm sorry,
of the issues
Joe.
Is that, oh, I'm sorry. I was going to say the indeterminacy of what victory looks like, I think is kind of true on both sides. There's some greater clarity now. It seems like Russia's demands are Ukraine passed a constitutional amendment to say that they're not going to ever join NATO and that they give up the eastern territories that have been functionally independent for a while in the east for the last 8 years. And so, yeah, if it doesn't look like anything that happens is going to change one of those two outcomes. I think there's an argument to be made. Because, by the way, your argument was made by the Bishop of Little Rock, Anthony Taylor, I believe is his name. And I think the response to it, and I think the argument that the Ukrainians are making, is basically they get a better negotiating position. If this isn't the easy victory that it looked like it might be, and we're in now week three of the war,
yeah,
that Russia might give more favorable terms. Not that there's going to be a total victory on either side, but if we understand victory at a kind of a microcosm level of if we keep up the fight for a little longer, then fill in the blank. But I don't know what that blank is. I don't know what objectives reasonably
Yeah, what is success?
Could,
right.
Yeah.
What is success?
And there was the run-up to the war was 15 years. It was 2007
yes.
when Vladimir Putin said he would not accept this. And he never stopped saying it. I'm not saying he's not a tiger eating, you know, other people's cubs, but that's what he is. But you have to know that. And I do think that the admonition of Jesus that go out and sue for peace before the war starts is an admonition that should have been better attended to.
And by the way, throughout history, certainly throughout Christian history, negotiated settlements have been part of conflict. I think
yeah.
because I don't know why. There is a series now, a BBC series, streaming on one of the services, I can't remember which one, called The Last Kingdom. And it's a fictional account of England in the 9th century when the Danes are invading and Alfred the Great is, you know, reduced to his marshy island there that Chesterton it turns into an epic ballad in the Ballad of the White Horse. But Alfred the Great pays for peace.
Oh, that happened all the time in the Middle Ages.
Over yeah. and over again. The yeah. Danegeld or whatever they call it, right?
Right.
He buys peace. Why? Because
it's valuable.
Well, that's right. Peace is good. And also he knows that lives are not going to be lost. And
yeah.
I can live to fight another day. And eventually, yes, he succeeds not only in defeating the Danes, but also accepting the baptism of Guthrum
yeah.
and various Danish leaders. So in any case...
But I have to say, I personally feel disgusted with the news reporting that reports on war as if it were an athletic event or some form of romance, where if you just hand out enough AK-47s
yeah, Kalashnikovs.
And we all band together and this is... This is people who have no meaning in their life looking for something that in their reporting to be meaningful. Get over it. There are more important things, and you can make peace if you try. If this romance about war as athletic endeavor is, to me, sickening.
Especially,
I'm disgusted
especially
by it.
In the modern age where so many civilians are gonna be maimed and die, and people are going to be driven insane,
and
children are going to be orphaned, and yeah.
And we haven't even mentioned the use of nuclear weapons.
Right.
I mean, be at the very least, be careful about that, Joe. We've talked over you though.
No, I think you said some very important things, and I think one of the things you kind of keyed into is one of the things I've found particularly frustrating about this current situation, which is I've never seen a war cheered for this much by a country not involved in the war.
Right. Absolutely.
I mean, even if you compare it to wars we've actually been involved in, did Iraq or Afghanistan get this kind of wall-to-wall coverage? I think the answer is no. I mean, you can't really turn on the radio and avoid hearing, I mean, anything that has talking. And now,
everyone's social media presence has to declare on which side they are.
Oh,
are
you better only declare one side,
are you
too.
Putting up,
and I don't mind. I mean, it's perfectly reasonable to be on Ukraine's side. They were invaded unjustly. But to not have a serious moral argument about why are we cheerleading for this, yeah, as if it's a sporting event when it could be stopped. I mean, the prime minister of Israel today, and I would say God bless him, he told Zelensky, stop. Enough has gone on. You have to negotiate a peace now, even though it's...
And they know about unjust wars. And
yeah, if yeah. anybody knows about that. all right. So we'll take a quick break. Maybe we'll take calls if you want to call us and talk about the war. But I'm almost done talking about the war because I'm going to start saying things that I'm really going to regret. 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884.
Have you enrolled in the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics? Let me ask you a more important question. Do you believe as a Catholic that you have an obligation to share the Catholic faith? In fact, the Church has answered this question, and the answer is that all confirmed Catholics are obliged to share the faith. It's actually in canon law. Catholic Answers is here to help you fulfill that obligation. Our School of Apologetics courses will equip you to help all the people you come in contact with understand what the Church teaches and why. A great place to start is with all the Catholics in your life. Learn the art of apologetics from the best of the best and start sharing the gospel today. Visit schoolofapologetics.com. That's schoolofapologetics.com. Here's a question. Is it really possible to be friends with someone who died 2,000 years ago? Maybe the problem is that we've grown way too comfortable with the story of Jesus. Nice man, right? Taught us to love one another, said not to judge people. We celebrate his birthday every year. It's time to put away this small, safe version of Jesus, says Cy Kellett. Nobody that bland could have transformed the world. In A Teacher of Strange Things, Cy presents Jesus Christ undiluted by sentiment, with all his radical words and deeds uncensored. Do you know someone, your son or daughter perhaps, or maybe your mom or dad, who needs the friendship of Jesus Christ? Do you? Order your copy of A Teacher of Strange Things by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
At what point is your day complete?
We'd love to hear from you Monday on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie.
On most of these EWTN stations.
Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. It's the panel show, the Friday panel show. Chris Check, president of Catholic Answers here. Joe Heschmeyer, the flannel-wearing apologist, the beloved proprietor of Shameless Popery. We were talking a little bit about the war, but I just want to sum up that there's clear violations of just war understandings, Catholic just war understandings, in the invasion of Ukraine. It should not have happened. It's illegal. It's immoral. It's just terribly, terribly wrong. But there are also considerations of when you should stop pursuing warfare as a means because your people are, in fact, defeated or have so little hope that it's not worth wasting all these lives on the effort. And I'm not sure that... I'm trying to make that calculus, although I am ashamed that we're not raising that, that our media is not raising it, that it's not being raised anywhere, that if there's a negotiable settlement on the table, even if it's unjust, at some point you have to take it.
That's well
said,
Cy.
Yeah, I think it's a very good summary.
Yeah. Okay. That's all right. Well said. Then we'll move on to
this. This is one of those rare moments where I think we all agree.
Holy smokes, look at that.
Well, that's because that's church teaching, by the way, what Cy said
right.
is what the church teaches.
I mean, he's asking the right questions. Yeah. Exactly.
okay. So there was other big news today. There's so much big news that in reading and preparing for this, I'm going to tell you the truth. One afternoon, while I'm reading various news reports trying to get ready for this, I thought, the world is a mess. And it wasn't just a thought. Like, I know this, like, I really felt like a depression coming over me. Like, this is horrible, the world we live in at the moment.
It is a mess.
So there is good news, though. And Andrew, who works here in the office, you know, and Chaldean Andrew, the one Chaldean Catholic who works here.
I do.
He comes into my office and he goes,
well, we have a quota. It's one.
We do not have a quota.
What'd you say, the one Chaldean?
Well, he is the only one. I mean, he comes into my office and he goes, what's the endurance?
Oh, my gosh.
Chris is over the moon that they found the endurance. What is it? And I said, you better learn fast, man, because Chris isn't going to like it if you don't know.
This is the greatest story. The greatest men against nature story in human history.
Really?
Ernest Shackleton. I said Alfred. Ernest Shackleton in 1914 raises a bunch, mostly of private money, to be the first, to lead the first expedition to cross the Antarctic continent.
Yeah, and that went well.
Well, it turned out, in some ways, it turned out even better because they nonetheless, the ship called the Endurance,
sails
from South Georgia, and they are trapped in the ice, and the crew camps adjacent to the boat waiting for the ice to melt so they can either escape or continue with the journey or with the expedition. But the ice has so damaged the hull that once the thaw comes, and water starts coming in, the ship starts to sink. So they have to abandon ship. They take the dogs, they take the lifeboats, and only what is necessary to live. That's it. And then start heading north, right? And then make an open sea crossing of about 350 nautical miles over a period of about 5 days in open boats.
But when you say make their way north, the part about that is that—
Back towards the southern tip of the
ice is so broken up, they're just riding on ice floes.
Well, they are. They do go, because before the open sea adventure of ice and misery and salt begins, they are kind of hopping from one ice floe to the next. Yeah. So they're headed back towards Tierra del Fuego. I forget the name of the island they finally leave part of the crew on, or most of the crew. Then Shackleton and maybe four or five others take one of the lifeboats, and they're sailing for an island that is habited only partly throughout the year. It's a fishing camp.
Yeah.
And I've forgotten the name of it. They're blown off course, so they end up on the wrong side of this island, and they have to traverse these mountains.
The first people ever to go over that mountain, because they had to.
Get over.
It's like the Pizarro brothers going down the Amazon. Like, well, there's no other way out of here. You got to go.
They show up on the doorstep of these fishing shacks, and then the rescue is arranged. No one dies.
That's the amazing thing.
He brings back his entire crew.
Not the dogs.
No, that's
true. He did
true.
Not bring the dogs.
That is true. But I mean, it's such an amazing story. If you want to read about just men against nature, but also something that interests me a lot, an expression we use in the Marine Corps, and I'm sure before then it's been used, the loneliness of command, because Shackleton has got to be the guy who makes the decisions, even the unpopular ones. And of course, as things get worse and people get hungrier, et cetera, the quarreling just gets underway.
Right.
This is the book. I have given about six books away more than a dozen times, and this is one of them.
You've given that to people more than a dozen?
Endurance by Alfred Lansing. Now, there are other accounts, but I think Lansing's prose style is superb. And I hope that the finding of the Endurance inspires a lot of people, especially young boys, 15, 16 years old, to pick up Alfred Lansing Endurance. and read this amazing story of just total fortitude.
Yeah, yeah. Joe, you got anything to say?
I love it. I was just lapping that up. I know extremely little about Shackleton. I was introduced to Shackleton at all from a song by, I believe it was a Canadian band, The Weaker Thans, had a song called Our Retired Explorer, in which the singer recounts a dream where Ernest Shackleton sits down with the French philosopher Michel Foucault for dinner.
Oh, my God.
And it's a totally bizarre kind of, and I had to be like, who's Ernest Shackleton? So that was my exposure.
That's my kind of song.
I'm at the intermittent level of like, who?
But they found the Endurance at 10,000 feet at the bottom of the Weddell Sea perfect shape.
It looks perfect. It's weird. The rigging is still there.
Hence the name.
It really is enduring down there. But I was telling Chris, I always feel having mixed feelings when they find these ships at the bottom of the sea, because I always feel like, well, now what do we do? What are you supposed to do? Well, we found it. Well now what do we do?
It's a historically protected site now.
Oh, well, that's good.
They're gonna limit the number of people who can visit every year.
Were there a lot of
right? It's a UNESCO site.
I don't know how much trouble we were causing at 10,000 feet below the ocean, but anyway.
It is neat. They have the, I don't know what these things are called, underwater drones or whatever.
Yeah, it is amazing.
The footage is, it's stunning.
Our number is 888-318-7884. If there's anything about the discussion you've wanted to get in on, go ahead and give us a call, 888-318-7884. No promises, but we'll try to get some folks involved in the conversation. Okay, so I'm making a sandwich here, and that was the delicious stuff in the middle, and now we got to go back to the bad bread. And I think we'll play some audio.
Well, I don't think I want to have one of your sandwiches, by the way. That does not advertise well for your cooking abilities.
Well, okay, all right.
Making a sandwich is not cooking.
Oh.
That's a decent counter.
that's why your sandwiches are bad.
We're going to get somebody from Panera Bread.
Did Darren give you some audio to play? Okay, so I usually end the show with you guys with some audio from National Public Radio. But I didn't want to wait to the end because I got some other things I'd like to do at the end of this program. So a 30-second clip from National Public Radio. I won't even set it up. I just want to get your reactions. It's not even the full story. It's just the introduction to a story from National Public Radio. I apologize. I don't know the name of the reporter who is the interviewer.
It's not Ari Shapiro?
It's not Ari Shapiro, and it's not who's the one that I can't remember the other one either. All right, play the National Public Radio, if you would, Sarah, and then we'll get reaction from these two men.
In Texas, Governor Greg Abbott has directed the state's Department of Family and Protective Services to investigate certain gender-affirming care for transgender children as possible child abuse. For people under 18, that usually includes things like hormones or puberty blockers, not surgery. The ACLU in Texas asked a state court today to block these investigations. Governor Abbott's order continues political moves that began last year when Texas banned transgender girls from participating in women's sports in public schools.
All right, that's just the introduction. Then she goes on to introduce...
I wonder where she falls on the issue. She's doing such a good job of presenting it neutrally.
What? Yeah. I'm sorry. Wait, is gender-affirming care?
The opposite of what the words literally mean.
It's the opposite of what
100%.
Care is.
Yeah,
that's exactly right,
well,
Joe.
That is not what
Joe
gender
nailed it.
Is.
Gender-affirming care means the exact opposite of gender-affirming care.
Yeah, the word actually hearing is mutilation.
Yeah, well, but she goes out of her way to say, in most cases, if you're under 18, this does not involve surgery. It's just hormones and then something else.
But you know what? I think
wait a minute.
I think broadly that comes under the term mutilation.
Yeah.
If you're giving someone hormones contrary to his natural physical or her natural physical sex, that's mutilation.
You're not treating somebody.
No.
You're attacking someone's body.
Poisoning. It's poison.
This is child abuse. There's no question.
I mean, literally, gender comes from generare. To beget. So since the 15th century, do you have male or female sexual organs? And so to say that severing the sexual organs you've been given
is
gender-affirming care.
Right.
It's like saying it's health care to abort a child. Like, I mean, you couldn't find something more antithetical to the language that you're
using.
It really is Orwellian.
I have to know what room. I mean, props to these people. I have to know what room
these journalists, if that's what you want to call them, advocates, were sitting around the table thinking, what euphemism can we come up that is so preposterous
that people have
and
to
yet,
accept it?
And yet people are going to accept it anyway.
Yeah. This to me is bullying. This is what I would think of as journalistic bullying, where we pretend that an issue is resolved, an issue that is not resolved. We pretend that it's resolved, and then we use language to that is specifically designed to intimidate you from inquiring, what the heck are you talking about? You're damaging the physiology of children, and I'm supposed to... Wait, you're the good guys and the bad guys are the people who want to stop this? To me, that's all that this is bullying.
God bless Governor Abbott.
Yeah,
I know.
I mean, it's kind of shocking that the conventional stance now is that being against genital mutilation is now discriminatory and taboo.
Yeah. And of minors. I mean, what's being done to adults, especially adults who have serious mental issues. I mean, we all know, we've talked about it before on here, you know, among those who have gender reassignment surgery, you're 4 or 5 times more likely to have underlying autism. You're several times more likely to have other mental health. And I know that, well, that's because they got teased in school. Well, no, that's not where autism comes from. You don't get autism from being teased in school. Mm-hmm. So what we're doing is we're dealing with people who are vulnerable by attacking their bodies instead of helping them.
What psychopaths?
But when you do that to children, you are a child abuser. That's what you are. That's the word for that. That's child abuse.
What psychopaths studied medicine so that they could come out on the other end of that with the MD so that they could practice this these diabolical arts?
Well, yeah, that's right.
And I think it's people with a bad anthropology. I mean, in a lot of, like, I don't think
you think
I'm want to be as charitable, as generous as possible to the people who are doing these things. I think they think that they're helping, and I think they think they're helping for two reasons. One, there is this really distorted, and I think it's fair to say demonic, understanding this of freedom as the ability to define reality in your own
however
terms.
I want. You know, there's the Casey decision.
That's what
Lucifer tried to do.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say. Like, this is the non serviam of Lucifer. I will not accept reality as it exists. I want to be the master of reality. It is trying to put yourself literally in the place of God. That whole playing God thing is not just a figure of speech. Like, when you are trying to reinvent what words mean, when you're trying to reinvent what genders are, when you're trying to tinker with the basic structure of reality, or just denying that reality exists, that is really, really dangerous territory. But the other area, and the area where I have some sympathy, even though I think it's misapplied, is there is this common myth that if you don't do these so-called gender-affirming treatments, that the people with gender dysphoria will kill themselves.
It's a lie.
And we know scientifically it's a lie. Yeah, yeah. There was a massive study done in Sweden, I believe it was, where they published the results. It made international headlines, and they found, you know, young people and adults who'd had these surgeries were way less likely to commit suicide, self-harm, attempt suicide, depression, fill in the blank. And then someone went back and looked at the data and realized they'd gotten it all wrong, and it actually
is the
proven
other
the opposite point on accident.
Right.
Well, somehow that story didn't make the headlines.
The audio I almost chose for this was from NBC News, where they're talking to an advocate for this kind of thing, who says, there's no other way to talk about this. Governor Abbott is killing children. This is going to lead to the death of children, which is absolute. I mean, again, the bullying is unbelievable.
Like, of course, I don't want to
agree with me, or I'm going to kill myself. It's really bad.
And not only am I going to kill myself, all these kids are going to kill themselves too. That's not that the irrationality of it is monumental and cruel. It's a, but I, have you ever,
and just false.
I got to go to the break, but before I go to the break, I want to ask you, have you ever seen that? There's this British comedy team that did a comedy bit years ago. Every now and then you see the video of it, and it's two Nazi soldiers who finally figure out that they're the bad guys.
Baddies.
Wait, are we the baddies?
Yeah. Are we the baddies?
Well,
yeah.
Like, if your side is the side that is determined to kill babies in the womb, is at least willing to hire poor women, take them away from their family so that they can carry surrogates for people. And now you want to readjust the genitalia of children.
Yeah.
Maybe at some point you got to say, are we the baddies?
Yeah.
This is Archbishop Paul Coakley, the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Do you love praying for people? Have you ever wanted to use your gift of prayer to share Jesus with others and build up the body of Christ? Start a public prayer station with St. Paul Street Evangelization. Listen to people's needs, pray with them, or invite them to meet you at church. St. Paul Street Evangelization can help you get started. Find out how at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
The most original and exclusive Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
I'm continually amazed and humbled at the way God can work through me to help so many people. Although I have no idea what the caller's questions will be that day, I trust that the Holy Spirit can use my education and experience to guide, challenge, or comfort those who call.
Mast Appeal with Colleen Kelly Mast, Saturday morning, 9 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Sitting next to me is the president of Catholic Answers, Chris Check, and joining us from somewhere in the Midwest, I think the state of Missouri, Kansas, one of those places. I got it right. You're not in Missouri. You're in Kansas. I know that.
Correct.
It's a fluid border.
Isn't that? It was once. It's not now.
What isn't?
Boy, talk about a border war. Let's talk about that the next hour.
Then I'll start talking about Quantrill. But I've told you about Quantrill, haven't I? What happened to him? Do you know what happened to Quantrill?
I don't know if you've told me about it.
Quantrill's Raiders. The talk about being a baddie. I mean, a murderer and a racist and a horrible killer. He ended up shot in, I think it was Tennessee, after the war, dying. A Catholic priest came and visited him, and he accepted baptism, repented, and hopefully we'll see him on the other side sometime. We'll all be where he is.
Wow, St. Quantrell, that really throws you for a loop. That one, I did not see that.
I've sometimes thought of writing a book about the amazing deathbed conversions of Catholics, like Oscar Wilde and Quantrell and these
John
other.
John Wayne.
Yeah, John Wayne, I think, did become Catholic on his deathbed. I don't remember that.
That's what his son or grandson says.
Oh, yeah?
One of my top 10 films is about the Kansas-Missouri border war.
What's that?
Ride with the Devil.
Yeah, well, Quantrill's in that, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
Is that Ang Lee?
It is Ang Lee. It is a brilliant film. And you know who else is in it? Jewel.
Is that about the James Gang, too?
Yeah.
The James Gangs were... Jesse James was like the nice version of Quantrill. He was the more moderate version of Quantrill.
So one of the James brothers ends up in a prison in Stillwater, Minnesota. And you know who his prison guard is?
Who?
Solanus Casey.
Is that really true?
And he
blessed Solanus Casey.
And he made, well, he wasn't blessed then. He was just a prison guard. He wasn't even a Franciscan. Maybe it was one of the Youngers. Anyway, I think it was Cole Younger, excuse me, makes him a steamer trunk, which he then keeps for the rest of his life.
Solanus
Casey's tomb, as I have, and I recommend everyone go there. You will be overcome by a peace if you go visit Solanus Casey in Detroit. Do it.
Magnificent American saint.
Yeah.
Not officially a saint yet.
But you can see a little piece of the steamer trunk that Cole Younger made for Solanus Casey.
I didn't realize that. I've been there. I didn't realize that.
I can't wait to go back.
I got to mention this real quick before we go on to our next story. It's the panel show where we talk about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. But we've got the Catholic Answers Conference coming up this September 22nd through 25th right here in beautiful La Jolla, sunny San Diego. And it's usually a wonderful time of year to be here. But even better, we're going to talk about the Eucharist. We've been focusing on Jesus, and now we'll focus on Jesus in the Eucharist. I am always with you is the theme. Tim's going to be Tim Staples, Jimmy Akin, Trent Horn, Carlo Broussard, and the apologist in flannel will be there, as well as Bishop Thomas Papraki, Dr. Lawrence Feingold, and Simone Riscala. Tell me about Simone Riscala.
I can tell you about Simone Riscala.
Tell me about her.
She works at Endow, which does a lot of Catholic. Yeah, you've met. She sat in the chair where Chris currently is. And she unpacks a lot of magisterial documents kind of for a living with that. She's got a pretty cool sounding talk where she's going to be exploring the kind of communion dimensions of the Eucharist, meaning in 1 Corinthians, St. Paul says we are one body because we partake of the one loaf. Now, a lot of times, I think Christians act as if he said the opposite, that we partake of the one loaf because we're one body. That, hey, we're all Christians, let's gather around the table and share communion, share Lord's Supper together. But he says the opposite, that ecclesial oneness, the oneness of the church, is actually created by, not just celebrated by, sacramental communion.
Praise God.
And that's a huge kind of understanding, both for like Catholic Protestant stuff, but also like as Catholics, do we live that out? Or do we think of this as kind of like my own private personal relationship? Do I bring it into the broader ecclesial sphere?
You know, Cy, apart from our first-rate team speakers who are here at Catholic Answers full-time, one of the things I'm most proud about the conference is we bring in first-rate guests.
Yeah.
Bishop Papraki is going to talk about who is just a shining star in the, or light, I should say, in the American Episcopacy out of Springfield, Illinois. He's going to be talking about Eucharistic coherence. And then a common friend of Joe's and mine, Larry Feingold, who teaches at Kenrick Seminary there in St. Louis, convert from Judaism who was brought into the church largely by beauty, would you say, Joe, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And
he tells a beautiful story about being in St. Peter's and looking up at the Last Judgment fresco by Michelangelo. And all these tourists are in there gawking at it, taking pictures. And he has this moment where he asks, but is it true? And it was just this incredibly pivotal, you know, as someone with a deep aesthetic formation, he understood the way art pointed to truth, and it revolutionized his life.
He's going to be talking about communion, sacrifice, presence, which is really the theme of our conference. I'll say this. I heard him speak at a conference in St. Louis about 5 years ago on Tres of Lisieux, and it is the best after-dinner talk I ever heard.
You can come to the Catholic Answers Conference just by going visit CatholicAnswersConference.com. Put in the promo code EARLY for $50 off. CatholicAnswersConference.com. I want to get to Mary in Minnesota before we go, because what I'm being told is Mary is not thrilled with our conversation thus far. So I'm going, Mary in Minnesota, you are on air. Welcome.
Welcome. And, you know, a couple things that I was telling the person who answered the phone is, as we do, my husband and I, we're Catholic. We listen to EWTN, and I have to say, I don't know your credentials, and I'm going to look them up when I get out of my car. I have Bluetooth, and I'm going to visit my daughter. So, but I just feel like if you're going to have a good dialogue about something, you should have someone who has the opposing view who's Catholic also. You both said, I didn't listen to the whole show because I started listening to it when I got into my car, but you said that, you know, anybody who's for this war is crazy. Those are not good terms to use. Some bishop is crazy. Venimo, I don't know who he is. You know, I just think to have a fair conversation, you should have somebody that doesn't think the same way you do. Because to me, I'm too young to have been around during World War II. My mother was a young girl. But Hitler, to me, Putin is like Hitler.
Ah.
And yes.
All right, Mary. Unfortunately, that's the music, but I want to respond to what you have to say. If you want to hang on for a few minutes, you can through the break, and we'll talk about it. If not, we will respond and you listen if you like, because I know you're on your way to your daughter's. So your comments are very much appreciated. I do not recall using the word crazy, however.
I'm sure none of us did.
But I do want to address that idea that you can't back down to Hitler, and Putin is Hitler. We'll do that when we come back. Plus, we got a whole bunch more stuff to talk about. It's a tough world out there right now. All kinds of difficult moral issues, difficult practical and economic issues. We'll talk about some of that from a Catholic perspective when we come back right here on Catholic Answers Live.